welcome to the first episode of the JRPG Book Club, a spinoff, if you will, of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I'm your host, Robert, and with me is my lovely wife, Gina. Say hi, Gina.
Hi, Gina.
Yeah. We got the idea for this podcast after I was editing episode 38, and my rant slash story about Dragon Quest V got real long. And here's the thing. I really self-edited myself. I could have gone on like about four times as long as that.
You already go on as longer than that, you know, when you were not recording the podcast.
Right. But that's you. That's different.
But you guys got the edited version of the edited version.
That's true. Well, I do pass all my jokes through my wife first and refine them for you, our lovely audience. You know, I like these games. I want to talk about these games. I want to talk to somebody about these games. And try as I might, Jonathan says he's going to play 5 sometime soon. I've almost conned my business partner into doing it.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Good luck with that. Yeah, so I was like, you know, I like talking about these games. And I think they're good enough. And so I was like, hey, Gina, maybe we should play these games and talk about them. And, you know, because if I want to talk about them, you want to talk about them and break them down and dive into them. You know, maybe people want to hear it because people have said that part's entertaining. It's just, you know, it's not really what the podcast is about. So I've been, you know, cutting it down.
Yeah. So I somehow got roped into doing this, huh?
Well, it was because we were on vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you definitely got my got me when my guard was lowered.
So we,
you know, when you're on vacation, you're like, sure, let's do that. Let's stay up. Let's eat ice cream for dinner. Let's spend gobs of money on useless crap. Play a JRPG and make a podcast. Sure, why not?
That sounds great. The Google only says it's 34 minutes away walking. Yeah, let's go do that. It's a little downhill. Whatever.
Just a stroll.
So yeah, we're gonna do 3 episodes, and if you guys like what you hear, let us know, because we could certainly do more. That's why we're not calling this the Dragon Quest podcast, because if we go on further, we'll do more than just Dragon Quest. That's why we call it the JRPG podcast, because if you guys want to hear more, we can go on further, but for the foreseeable future, it will be the Dragon Quest podcast. But we're gonna do the first 3 Dragon Quest games. I think we can get that all done in about 5 episodes, because the third one's long and we might have to break that one up into a couple of episodes. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. You know, it might be like a book, you know, because this is a book club. So, you know, sometimes the book club only reads like half the book because it's really long. We'll pick kind of like an arbitrary point where we'll stop and then we'll discuss the story up to that point and what we think, what's going on.
We have small children. There's only so much playing we can do.
Right. But for this first episode, we played the very, very first Dragon Quest game, the mobile version, which is, I've heard it's on Android. I know for sure it's on Apple. It's $3. But yeah, that's the plan. So we're gonna do Dragon Quest 1, and we'll just do the first 3 games, and we'll see how many episodes that takes. And if we get a good response, we'll keep going. And if not, then it'll be the first 3 games. Yay. And I'll go back to ranting about it on the main podcast. But yeah, this is the spinoff, so we'll see how it goes. And yeah, there won't be any clever episode titles on this one. It's just going to be JRPG Book Club episode whatever. Dragon Quest Part 1, Dragon Quest 1, yeah, whatever. So so before we get into anything, we should explain the story. And the story is very basic, and we'll get into it later, but this is just the bare bones plot.
You are apparently the descendant of Erdrick, who yep. was a hero way back when. I'm not exactly sure what he did, but he was a hero.
We'll get into that.
And then the king tasks you with saving the world.
Yep. So you have to save the princess because she's been kidnapped by the evil Dragon Lord. And then the Dragon Lord has stolen the Orb of Light. And he is going to, you know, do his evilness with it.
I guess he's already used the Orb of Light to cast darkness.
We'll get into that. But, but yeah, so the basics are, to get to the Dragon Lord's castle, you have to build the Rainbow Bridge. To build the Rainbow Bridge, you need...
The Rainbow Drop.
And you make the Rainbow Drop out of...
3 items. The first is...
The Sunstones.
And then the...
Staff of Rain.
And the Seal of Erdrick to prove that you are the descendant of Erdrick.
And then the old man in the southern shrine puts that all together, builds you a rainbow drop, which he can use to build the bridge. And I have a theory that sage is the builder from Dragon Quest Builders. But that's another review. and that's the story. So If you want to bring up topics or if you want to play along with us, we will tell you the next game we're going to play, which, spoiler alert, I said we're going to play the first three Dragon Quest games, and we played the first one for our first episode, so I'll let you guess what's next. But if you want to play along with us, you can feel free, and I'll have a thread up there in case anybody, you know, if you're playing along with us and you see something weird or you want us to talk about it, just fill out a comment and we can talk about it on the air.
And you could also decide to play the first game and then pose questions, and we could probably answer them in the next episode.
That's true. Everybody, let's thumb through our dog-eared pages of Dragon Quest One, and let's discuss.
This is the JRPG Book Club.
Dun, dun, dun. So I did some deep research on this topic. I read a whole Wikipedia article about this.
Wow, an entire Wikipedia article.
I know. That's some crazy research there. So Dragon Quest was released in Japan in May of 1986 and in North America as Dragon Warrior in 1989. The reason they had to change the name was there was a competitor to Dungeons & Dragons called Dragon Quest already released in the States. So because of that, they just couldn't release it as Dragon Quest here. They had to change the name, which is kind of funny because I would never have heard of that role-playing game if it wasn't because of the video game. The version we both played was the iOS version, which started life as a port of the Super Nintendo version, which was then ported to mobile phones, which was then ported to iOS later. So the it was ported in 2007, although I may have gotten that wrong because I think I read something different earlier today, but whatever. Let's talk about that story of Dragon Quest One.
There's a guy who's gonna save the world. The end.
Say what you want about this game. I was thinking about this because I was playing it and I was getting all like, I was getting all comfort fooded. Like I was sitting there and I was having, it was like watching The Force Awakens, I guess. I was having a, you know, it's not a new story. You're a knight in shining armor. You get tasked to save a princess. I mean, it's like every stereotypical D&D campaign ever. The only thing that doesn't happen is you don't start in a bar.
You start in a king's office.
Yeah, and maybe
room, I guess.
Yeah, and maybe he found you in a bar, who knows. But I don't know if it's a story that's been done to death, but it like kind of gets a buy because I just know personally the game's like super old.
Well, I mean, it's not any different than Super Mario Brothers. It's like, what the heck is Mario doing? He's running through some castles looking for a princess.
And this one you get to equip magic armor? I don't know. The story is...
This was also before the video games had stories, right?
Well, no, they had stories. There was a story to Donkey Kong. If I remember correctly, Donkey Kong was mad because they were treating him bad. So he stole, I don't even remember what... Daisy? He steals Daisy and goes up the tower with her. And then Jumpman has to save her. That's a story. It's not much of a story, is it?
Well, I mean, back then, the only thing that any video game really required was you got to go get the MacGuffin, which was usually a princess.
Okay. I'll give you like console video game here. I'll give you console video game because very explicitly, according to my deep, deep Wikipedia research, the creator of the game was basing it off of playing Ultima 3 and Wizardry. And I have not played Wizardry, but I've played Ultima 3 in my day, and Ultima 3 definitely has a story. It's not a great story. Well, I mean, it's been a long time since I played 3.
I haven't played it, so.
But there is a story. Like, there is a backstory. It is the third one. There are two that preceded it. It is the, you know, it's a direct sequel of those two games. Like, there's enough of a thing there that they, you know, sort of put it together. It was the first time it was done on a console, I would say. And I don't know if Legend of Zelda predates it. It might. I'm not sure. But anyway, I mean, there's stories in these video games. But yeah, they're flimsy. I'll give you that. It's flimsy. It's an excuse plot.
Even with Legend of Zelda, it's like, you know, I don't even know the story. It's just Link runs around until he finds until he rescues the princess.
From Ganon.
Yeah. Which, it's like, why does he want the princess? I don't know.
I don't know either. Well, okay, so in this game, the bad guy is the Dragon Lord, right?
And he wants the princess.
But,
I mean, he hasn't gotten there yet.
Right. I think we're in agreement. There's not much of a story here. But do you agree or disagree that it is, like, the most stereotypical fantasy story that there probably is? Like,
yeah, pretty much.
Not involving
it's
a bar.
The trope, essentially. It's the apex of tropes.
Tropes?
It's a complete trope from A to Z.
But are tropes bad?
I mean, it's a trope for a reason. It was new when it was starting out, probably. Probably? I have no idea, actually.
I don't think it was new then. You know, Mario, well, it was on the NES, so Mario had to have been out by then.
I mean, okay, let's face it. back then stories like you taking the story of like Robin Hood. Who the heck is Robin Hood? He's going to go rescue Maid Marian. Why is she? You know, nobody knows all that stuff. In the very, very not the Kevin Costner stuff or the ones that.
Well, and everybody's got reinterpretations of it to explain it. But the trope's there.
Yeah, and pretty much, you know, stories from the beginning of time have involved some hero going to rescue usually a princess of some sort.
Right.
From a bad guy.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think tropes are bad. And for what this game was, I don't think the storyline was bad. It was familiar. It was done to death, yes. Again, I gave it a buy because I know it's super old, so it's just I wasn't expecting much out of it. And
you know, I wasn't expecting a story, so it didn't really matter. I mean, it just, you know, it's like point me at the whatever and let me go kill it.
Did the story deliver then for you? Like
it wasn't.
You haven't played all three of the first games, but I have, and I can tell you that there's stuff that comes up in this game that actually comes up later too.
Well, okay, I'll grant you that. It'll probably mean a lot more to me in the later games because I come with a blank slate. I haven't played any of these games. Although I'm pretty sure my brother, because we did have an NES growing up, because you know everybody did. Well, yeah. A third of the American households did, and it looks familiar, but you know I did watch my brother play a lot of NES games, so I'm pretty sure he played it, but I don't remember much. For me, blank slate. It's like here's a video game, just play it, and me going, oh, okay, cool.
But the story do it for you, like you're the descendant of Edric, and you know. And why do we need the descendant of Edric? That's the thing the game doesn't explain very well. But why do we need the descendant of Edric to go tackle the Dragon Lord?
It's Erdrick.
Erdrick, whatever. Why do we need the descendant of Erdrick to go?
Is he a literal descendant or is just...
No, he is. He is a literal descendant. Because it's a reoccurring theme, I guess, in the games. But I don't know if somebody who wasn't a descendant of Erdrick could actually wield the weapons. So
well, I mean, it's not like they went into any of that. I just assumed it was a metaphorical thing that, you know, the hero of old was named Erdrick. I don't know exactly what he did, but he was a big hero. And, you know, you're the hero of this time. Who, coincidentally, I also named Erdrick.
Yeah, I named mine Lodo, but yeah, that doesn't matter. You are supposed to be a direct descendant of a great hero. Why you showed up now, I don't know, because another thing that this game is, which I don't think they make very clear, is this is like the apocalypse. Like the bad guy has won at this point. You are like the last hope.
I didn't get any of that.
Yeah, it's all in the manual, apparently, but...
manual.
Remember, you know how there's monsters everywhere? And then when you win, the monsters go away and you don't get attacked? Like, that's his army. He has already basically laid siege to every town in that land. And nobody can leave. Like, remember, you go to Cole, the bath town, and there's that lady there. It's like, my husband went to this town, and he hasn't come back. And then you go to Rimmeldar, and that guy's there. And he says he can't leave because there's monsters. Like everybody's trapped in those towns, they can't leave. They're stuck there.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I had to watch a YouTube video point that out. Like, I didn't get that. But you know, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff like you know in the manual about all of these games. You know that you know the Dragon Lord stole basically the sun for all intents and purposes. Although they called it the Orb of Light, and why the king had the Orb of Light and it's not flying around in the sky, I don't know. But stealing that cast the land in the darkness and let the monsters run rampant.
Oh, you know, I'm remembering.
It's like the first thing that the king says to you, and it can go by real quick because he also says to you, "Here's money," and like the adventurer in you is like, "Loot."
Well, I mean, yeah, it's exposition, but not even like, you know, well delivered exposition. It's just straight. It's like, what? Oh, I'll just move around and start killing things.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, it's all there in the manual. Basically,
who the heck still has a manual?
It's online. Everything's online.
Oh, right.
Yeah. The reason they needed the descendant of Erdrick to go do this is because the last time the Orb of Light got stolen, it was Erdrick who rescued it. And so that's why they're like, oh, surely you can go do this now that the apocalypse is upon us. And why you had to wait for the apocalypse to be upon, like, why couldn't you have just left, I don't know, a couple months earlier? I don't know. Yeah.
So this whole monster invasion has only been, like, around for...
I don't know. It's not very clear.
I mean, it's not that long because otherwise that married couple would have been separated for like years.
Yeah. I got the sense it's not that long, but the bad guy did win. And why he's sitting around at the bottom of his castle waiting for you to come kick his ass, I don't know. But
well, what's his plan?
His plan? He's done. He's won.
I thought he wanted the princess. princess?
Well, he's waiting for her. He sent his lackeys to get her, and that dragon fell asleep.
Oh, jeez.
Basically, in the game, they're like, what? There's four main characters. There's the king. There's the princess, there's your character, and then there's the dragon lord. So let's just address all these as what we can. So there's the king. Is there much to talk about?
I don't even know if he has a name.
He's the king of Alfgard?
Alfgard?
I thought it was Alfgard. I don't know.
Or unless you want to go Elfgard.
Elfgard?
Or, yeah, Elf, because it's A-L-E-F. So it's either, I think it's Alfgard.
Alfgard, okay. Yeah, I don't know what to say about the king. All right. So there's your protagonist, which we've already been kind of talking about. Do you have anything more to add to him?
Okay, well, I will say this. Representation matters and all that stuff. And so, you know, where you might think of that little character as you are embodying being a knight and fighting bad guys. For me, it wasn't like, oh, I am this person. It was more like, I'm playing a character. I'm like playing with the doll. That's pretty much it. I mean, it's not like there's much characterization there, so you can't, you're not playing an established character. You're putting whatever personality you want into that character.
It's a classic. Like Skyrim and the Elder Scrolls games do that a lot, where they don't, your character is a very blank slate and you're supposed to like fill in your own headcanon. It's just, I think all the Elder Scrolls games have the benefit of, well, I mean, maybe they have the benefit of Dragon Warrior, because Dragon Warrior tried that first, probably kind of failed, but you know, they were the first one to give it a crack at it. So, you know, any tricks they learned are iterated off of it.
Okay. So that character is pretty boring, and I didn't really fill it with much headcanon because that wasn't me. That was me playing with the doll. It's like Ken.
Okay. So I know you got stuff to say about the princess, so let's just get the Dragon Lord out of the way first before we go off about the princess. Because the princess is, I think we'll both agree, is the only other real major character in the thing besides the villain.
Oh, I guess the mini bosses?
Yeah, but they're the Dragon Lord's goons.
Yeah.
All right. So the Dragon Lord.
I think he's kind of cool looking, actually. He looks weird, but, you know, with the blue face. He's kind of snake-like, actually.
Yeah.
So
a precursor to Voldemort, maybe.
Yeah.
Turns into a giant dragon. Did you watch me beat Dragon Quest Builders, by the way? Did you see how big that dragon is in that game?
You know, I was there when you beat it, but I don't think I was paying attention.
Okay, I should load up that file again, because it's pretty cool. Like, well, we'll get to this in gameplay, but yeah, that dragon's large in the game, and the guy's, you know, he's about your size. He's kind of stocky, but he's about your height. What I kind of dug about that game, and what I dug about him as the villain, is when you roll up to him, he's like, hey, how about we, you know, rule this land together as like father and son or whatever, like Darth Vader did, like totally, like he's like, yeah, come on, like join me. And like the game actually gives you a choice right there. You can join him or you could not join him.
Yeah.
I thought that was cute. And you really have to say no twice, because it makes you like really commit to the whole like, no, I'm here to kick your butt.
It is pretty tempting the way he gives it to you, because it's not like an evil guy that says like, I'm going to be evil, be evil with me. It is more like, you know, do you want power? Everybody wants power. You've been like grinding for however many levels to gain the thing that represents power to you, which is stats and gear.
Yeah, numbers.
Numbers. So, yeah, he basically presents to you something that, you know, I mean, granted, it's all written very simply, but, you know, it's written kind of well, you know, for what it is.
You know what the funny part is? And you'll see this in part two, because the Kingdom of Alfgard exists in part two, and like the wider world does too. So he's like taken over like kind of an archipelago off in the corner of the map. and it's not even the whole world. He doesn't have designs on the whole world. He's like, I just like these islands right here. These are my islands. Any more to say about the Dragon Lord?
No, not really. I mean, he's kind of cute, but you know, all the characters are kind of cute. So
yeah. So let's talk about Princess. Princess Gwaelyn?
Gwaelyn. Or, you know, Princess, I simper a lot. Like, maybe it's the English translation. Did he not realize what simper means?
I don't
like,
know.
Like, simper is what dogs do when they know they just pooped in your shoes or eaten the garbage and they know they're going to be in trouble. So they're sitting there in the corner of the kitchen simpering. That's what to be simpering is, and she does it all the time. What's with that?
So yeah, you save the princess from a dragon. Fun note, that quest is optional. You do not actually have to do that to beat the game. Yeah, you at no point have to save her. The king, as the game progresses, will increasingly give you more and more guff if you don't. And apparently if you hit level cap, he'll really be like, why haven't you saved my daughter yet? Seriously.
What is level cap anyways?
30.
Yeah, you should be able to like two shot that dragon or something.
Yeah. That quest is optional. You do not have to go do that if you do not want to, but you know, why not? I guess you could kill the dragon and walk away if you don't want, because you have to talk to her to complete that too. Yeah, so yeah. Maybe there's that. But
be like, hey, you know, I killed the dragon for you. It's up to you to get out.
Yeah, she does simper a lot. She does fall madly stalkery in love with your character, and she gives you like a magic item so you can talk to her. Which you know why that's really important? Remember how you were supposed to go track down the token of Erdrick, and you're like, how am I supposed to track this down?
Yeah,
that direction they tell you to go, that's from the castle. And so you go chase down these clues that tell you to go to that swamp eventually.
Oh.
Or you just have that old guide, or remember the old guide, because I remember doing that. I just remember it's like, I'm just going to go over there because, yeah, screw this nonsense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, so it was 40 up and whatever from the castle. And then every direction you get is from the castle. But the trick, and that's why you need that thing, because she'll tell you where you are in relation to the castle.
Oh, okay. That explains why then she started mentioning all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. It's a game mechanic, so you can get the last little token.
Oh.
The token of Erdrick.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is it cheating that you just basically told me where to go because it's either that or I...
Well, that puzzle's really hard.
Yeah.
You gotta, like, walk all over the map.
It's like, I ain't got no time for that.
I know. Well, I just remembered where it was.
Yeah.
Like, you know, okay. Truth time here. I didn't remember that's where it was. Maybe I would have, but then I looked at a keyed map because I was trying to remember what town, because they told me to go to this town. I'm like, am I not at that town? Because they don't have somebody conveniently up front saying, it's like, hey, welcome to Cole or whatever. Like, there's usually one person in town, but I ain't got time for that. And I was just like, oh, where am I? And I was looking at a map and I saw the number key in the middle of the swamp. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's where that token is. And it like totally just came back to me. And I'm like, ah, damn it.
You know, there would have been something, because there's a giant swamp there with nothing around it.
Well, yeah, but they send you all over the world looking for clues, and it's like a big old Scooby-Doo mystery.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And it's just right there.
But anyway, Princess Gwaelin, yes, she does fall madly stalkery in love with your character at first sight, because you save her from a dragon.
Yeah, I mean, you know... I think Shrek already covered it in the whole, like, how can you just fall in love with the guy that rescues you? I mean, you don't know, you have no relationship. You just met the guy. He could be like a total loser. I mean, yeah, he was not a loser in that he managed to save you from a dragon, but like, what if he likes to, I don't know, like pick the toe jam out of his toenails and eat it? I mean, gross. You never know.
He's a knight in shining armor. How bad could he be?
Okay, not to mention, now this might be me reading, you know, having read Game of Thrones and, you know, watching all the PBS stuff, but okay, for royalty, marriage is a tool. So her being a princess, and not only that, the only child of the kingdom of Alefgard, her marriage should be a tool that the king should use to further the security, wealth, or whatever of Alefgard. So she would have been betrothed to a prince or something. Now, I understand the apocalypse is happening, so maybe they're like, hey, whatever, promises are broken. Hell, maybe she was betrothed to somebody and he died because, you know.
Well, the king offers you the kingdom at the end. He's like, hey, the apocalypse just happened. Why don't you take my kingdom out for a spin? And you're at the end, the guy's like, nah, I'm going to go off and found my own land.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense either.
I don't know. So the way I look at it is this. It's a tropey story, and it's like a fairy tale. Like, I was honestly disappointed that this part of it didn't include a final shot of your hero carrying the princess in his arms, because apparently that's her only mode of travel. They don't have horses. And, like, walking off into the sunset. Because, like, I mean, to me, that's what that story was. I want to say it's a fairy tale, but then I actually like read, like, I found this book that like details what fairy tales actually are in like a scientific way. And I'm like, this is not a fairy tale. It's just a tropey story of a guy saves a princess and rides off into the sunset.
Yeah.
Again, I think we can both agree that there's not much of a story there. And yeah, I found the princess a little stalkerish, but kind of cute. Like,
kind of
cute. Because it, for me, like, again, it just hit that whole vibe of like, oh, you know, it's like I saved the princess, you know, like, yay.
Yeah, except now, you just met her and she yearns for you already.
She does say yearn. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And I don't think
What does that mean?
Like, oh, I were this a novel, I think that would be the Bodice Rippery type of urine.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the sense I got. And maybe I'm reading too much into it. I mean, I will say this, like, it's, she's not a great character in the whole, like, trophy girl thing, you know, where it's like, oh, I beat something, so I, thus I get the trophy girl. I don't think it's really good. I don't know. Again, you know, 1986. I'll let it go. But
going back to my thing about political marriages, though, I will say this though. Given that the kingdom almost faced an apocalypse and has come back from it, the king, in trying to rebuild, will most likely have to do a lot of like raising taxes, whatever kind of stuff. But having his daughter be married to the hero of the land would only help, because then it'd be like, hey, everybody.
Do you want spoiler alert? Because I know how this all shakes out. I've played the second game.
No, I don't want a spoiler.
Well, okay.
But here's what would happen in the real world.
In the real world, okay.
Which is the king would be like, all righty, Aleph, Erdrick, or Loro. It's like, okay, I need to pass a hefty tax because we're going to be building all this stuff. So you will sell it for me. You're going to go on a speaking tour of the land and basically say, okay, folks, here's a time when you chip in all your money so we can rebuild the land. Like,
I will say this about the sequel. When you go back to Alfgard in the sequel, I think only the castle and two towns are left. So you must have, like, taxed the other places out of existence. Okay. So anything else about the story? Like, any other things to note?
I have a feeling it'll get a lot more interesting as, you know, other games comes through.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as with everything, you know, lore starts to bloat. And
well, after the third game, like, they wipe the slate every game from that point on. Yeah. You do go back to the Kingdom of Alfgard, or Alfgard or whatever, apparently in Dragon Quest Joker, which is one of the monster spinoffs. So, yeah, like, after three, we will not be returning to that world. Okay. So
interesting.
So moving on, let's talk about the game a little bit. Let's talk about some of that gameplay.
RPGs, I mean, I like RPGs, but I haven't really played many. And the closest I've come to it, I guess, is an MMORPG. So, wow, you know.
No. You played World of Warcraft? You were, like, in pop culture in the early 2000s? That's crazy. Or is it mid-2000s? It was mid-2000s.
Yeah. And so I was kind of used to the WoW mindset where I was expecting... Well, first of all, I was expecting, like, quests, like, quest-giving. And so when the you know, I went out and I went to that first town and I talked to that dying guard who said, like, tell the king that... we failed. I'm like, okay, I'll go tell the king. And all he does is like, hello, you know, you got, how many more experience points to
would you
level?
Like to save your game?
I'm like, but I have a message for you. And yeah, it's like, oh, okay, it's not that kind of game. Okay. And then, yeah, once you go to the store and there's all those like gear, you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to figure out like what's the best gear, look at stats and numbers. And it's like, oh no.
It's a Dragon Quest-y progression. I've played up through five now and they haven't gotten away with it. Although the thing that's funny in the original translation, apparently the armor that you don't start with armor at all. And the first armor you can buy, which they renamed later to traveling clothes, was just called clothes, which raised the point. Were you just like naked in front of the king in the NES version? I thought that was funny. It's a pretty strict progression of, you know, blah, 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 like clothes to leather to chainmail, typically to half plate, full plate, magic, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, there's not much. It's handy, I guess, in the future games because they'll say like what people can equip, but there's not a lot of stuff. Although it does get a little weird later, but we'll get to that in later games. But yeah, it's a pretty clear progression. It's like, does it cost more money? It's better, buy it.
Yeah.
Or go grind for it.
Yeah.
Oh, they love the grinding. Modern contrivances of video games. Non-existent, I would say, in this game. Like, they do not exist. And here's the thing. You know that button, that handy button on the top that has the map? That did not exist either in the original game. Really? No, your map was a paper map, and you liked it, and you unfolded it. And if you lost it, it was gone, because there was no internet.
Well, how would you know where you are in the game?
You'd have to follow the map. You'd have to kind of generally know where you were.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, yeah. They did not track that for you. You were like a real adventure. You'd have to just get out your compass and go, like, you know, look for landmarks and figure it out. Like, yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah. And if you're wrong, you're just going to get lost.
They do get lost. You get actually lost.
Wow, that is old school.
Yeah. Count yourself lucky, because that was totally a thing. And here's the thing: the map. I remember having the map for the original Dragon Warrior. It was painted. It wasn't even like a photo. It was an interpretation of the in-game map.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it wasn't like even like things lined up. I mean, there's landmarks around because, you know, there's always towns or something to go to. But yeah. Or swamps. Swamps are usually an easy thing to sort of spot because they're big and they're purple.
I was also a little bit taken aback by the lack of like clearly marked inventory. Like, I didn't even know there was inventory until I ran out of room. And then it's like, well, crap. I mean, I'm used to WoW, of course, where you pick up junk and then you sell it for money, and that didn't quite happen. But on the other hand, you know, as I'm breaking vases and stealing people's stuff from their drawers, you know, I picked up a set of the traveling clothes and then another bamboo stick or something, and I'm like, well, I guess I'm just gonna sell these. But, you know, I didn't know that I was supposed to sell them until I ran out of room, and then I had to get rid of it.
As much as it doesn't hold your hand in this app version, it really didn't hold your hand back in the old, because there was nothing telling you that. Yeah. There was nothing.
Oh, and then dungeons. Oh my gosh, it's a maze. And I can understand.
They're particularly bad. Like the first game, I noticed that in the first game, that they're pretty bad about being mazy.
And I mean, I guess it's a way of adding difficulty to the game, although it's kind of an unnecessary difficulty.
Do you want me to tell you something that will blow your mind? And I didn't realize this either until I watched a video of it and I had to go and confirm it.
What?
You know how there are little icons on the floor? You know, like you'd see like a dragon head? You follow those.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Those are pointing the way, especially in the Dragon Lord's castle.
Do they point?
If you see one, that's the direction you head in. You try to play connect the dots with them.
Oh.
In the Dragon Lord's castle, and I think one other place they have that.
Yeah, I remember seeing that in one of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, blew my mind too. I watched a video and I was like, "Whoa, it's so true."
I the main thing I wish there was a mini map that, you know, where you could mark where you go, or it marks where you've been. So if you're exploring the area and you're kind of like at a loss as to where to go next, you can look at the mini map and go, "Oh, I haven't explored this little corner." You know, that kind of stuff would have come in handy, because first of all, with the torch or the glow spell, I mean, you're only looking at a little bit of the map as it is, and everything looks the same, and you don't know if you've been here already. It's just, I don't know, I did a lot of wandering. I got a lot of levels and like gear that way, just from getting lost.
Nice.
Yeah.
You won't have that problem, and they don't do that anymore after that game.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Modern.
It's kind of funny because, you know, as well as you can say it's a grindy game, you don't actually have to grind if you're playing the game normally, not because you played it 20 years ago, but if you're playing the game normally, part of the game is getting lost and not knowing where to go. And so as you're then, you know, going, like trying to move around, you know, just run into a whole bunch of enemies and then, you know, kill them. And that's how you get your XP.
I don't know how you got so much. Well, actually, no, I found out how much you got so many gold. So you had like absurd amount of gold compared to me when we were at the same level. And I found out where it is. You know that place where you really need the gold over in Cantalin?
Yeah.
Yeah, the enemies there drop less of it. Comparative to their experience. So I was getting levels faster, but I was not getting gold as quickly as you were. Even though you probably got into significantly more battles, your XP to gold ratio was higher than mine. Huh. Which is why I ended the game after I got everything with like 10 grand in the bank, and I think you had like 21 or something insane.
Yeah, something insane like
that. So yeah, word to the wise, if you're ever playing that game, do not grind near Cantalin if you need money.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't even really, I mean, I grinded a little in the beginning, but towards the end there, just moving around was enough to grind out the money that I needed for the gear. Also, making sure you autosave so that you don't die and lose half your gold.
Yeah. Original game, you had to go to the king every time.
That's so annoying.
Yeah, it was. Future games, you have to go to a priest every time. Usually there's a priest in every town. Actually, I would say there is a priest in every town, so that's not as bad.
Yeah.
But still. So this game also sets the trend of having your protagonist character basically be a battle wizard, which is pretty funny. And not used enough people, more battle wizards. The one thing I loved about 4th edition was the sword mage. I love that class. It was great. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
Well, just because you could like cast spells as you're fighting?
Yeah, it's cool. Like you'd cast spells out of your sword. It was rad. But anyway, so your guy does this too. In future games, you kind of equate your hero a little bit more with the paladin, because usually they give him healing and buffing spells, and they don't give him attack spells. But no, not in this game. They give you fizz and sizzle.
Yeah,
fizzle's the anti-magic one. That's a debuff. But yeah, they give you sizz and sizzle, which are attacking spells. Now, given the when you first get sizz, it's the bomb, because it does like 20 points of damage when you're like whacking people with your copper sword for like 10 or 12. So you're like, yeah, but you quickly grow out of that spell.
Yeah.
And
one time I just used sizz because I'm like, oh, this is a new enemy, he's like powerful, I should use sizz. And then it's like a pathetic amount of damage compared to my sword. So I'm like, what?
Well, by the time you get sizzle, like, it's not even worth casting.
Yeah, I know.
So,
because you're also trying to, you know, save your magic points too for all your heals.
Oh, I never save my magic points.
Oh, I've got
the formula of how to do Dragon Quest Dungeons down, which is I go down there and I use magic liberally to just make my life easier, and I keep an eye on my magic, and when I get below 10, I cast evac and zoom, and then I just walk back and go do it all over again. That's my thing. I'm not down there for like the long haul. I'm just down in a dungeon to do what I need to do. And if I failed, like, it's like, have I gotten all the loot yet? Because like typically what I do is I'll go into a dungeon, I'll get all the loot, and if there's a boss in there, I'll avoid the boss, I'll bounce out, I'll heal up, I'll come back and go through the whole dungeon and get as direct to that boss as I possibly can without getting everything else. But the first thing I do is go like just trashing the place looking for stuff.
Well, I was doing that. It's just I was getting lost in those dungeons so much that I didn't want to keep going back. That's the main thing that just bugged the heck out of me, because everything looked the same. It was dark and that little circle, and I wasn't going to keep casting glow over and over again. I was going to wait until that glow circle became this little tiny thing before I cast glow again, because otherwise it was a waste of magic points. I mean, which is funny, because it ends up that I never really got low enough, except for that one time I was exploring, I forgot which dungeon.
So here's the thing I really like about this game, and I noticed it when I first played it 20 years ago, I noticed it again, and it's like, it's great. I love that when you start the game, when you exit the first castle, you see the Dragon Lord's castle. Like, it's just right across the bay. Now, why can't you swim there? I don't know. Maybe it's on a sheer cliff, you know, headcanon, whatever you need it to be. Very sheer cliff. There's sharks, currents, very, very deadly undertow. But I like that. I like that, like, you know, they're like, yeah, that's the bad guy's castle right there.
Yeah.
And it gives you this very tangible thing, because, yeah, I mean, it's an old game. Like, the villain couldn't, like, really interact with you much. He's not, like, a reoccurring villain. But just having the presence there from the get-go is, I just love that. I always love that part of it. It made the end game feel like I was, I mean, I not near it, but it was like, it was something I could see. Like, there was a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, it was a goal. There was a carrot dangling there.
Yeah. And I don't know many other games that do that, where, you know, like, your end game is very visible to you. Like, the Zelda games typically do it. Like, usually you can see, like, I know the new one, because Hyrule's all messed up and stuff. Like, you can see that right away. And you can even go there and get your butt kicked in low gear if you want. And there's people who have beat the game like that, but whatever. I don't know. I think that's good game design, personally. Like, I like that you can, there's this tangible thing, like, right there.
Yeah. Even just things like when you first start and I'm trying to open those doors and it's like, you don't have a key. And I'm like, what? And then, you know, you're going to learn about the magic keys. And then as soon as you get the first set of magic keys, you're like, I'm going to go open all those doors.
And then, like, at the castle, there's the one guy in there who's like, a real hero wouldn't steal all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm not a real hero. Just, I'm taking your junk. I need to buy myself a steel sword, baby.
Like, I went through a lot of trouble to get these magic keys. So, you know, give me all your stuff.
Yeah, at that point, I hadn't even saved the princess yet. I couldn't even say, I saved the princess, man. I'm going to take anything I want. No, it wasn't even that. I'm just like, I got these keys. Are you going to stop me?
Yeah.
I'm a descendant of Erdrick. Like, what do you got?
Yeah, you're the Keystack Hatterack.
Yeah, the Cuisinart Hatterack, yes.
But I mean, that was actually pretty good, though, because...
And then there's that other guy later who's like, he's like, why are you taking thief? Oh, you just might as well have it. It's the apocalypse. Just take all my stuff. I don't need it anymore. I'm going to die. I'm like, wow. Vote of confidence for me there, bud.
Well, I mean, but it's kind of cool though, because it does give every kind of location. Once you get the magic keys, not so much, but it means that there's multi levels to that castle, to the area.
Well, it's that whole Metroidvania thing of returning to a previous area with new stuff to see if you can get into new places.
Yeah. Like in Metroid, you see those skinny tunnels that you can't get to until you get the ball form.
Or it's like, oh, I'll go bomb that one thing. It's like, you need the super bomb. It's like, ah, oh, what's a super bomb?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The story of the fairy flute is also interesting because all the people were telling me, I need to get the flute. And it's like, okay, I need to get the flute. Only I was kind of getting confused with keeping track of everything. So when I got the lyre, I thought, okay, that's what I need to use for the golem, right? But then Robert's like, no, you need the flute. I'm like, okay, so I trade the lyre in for the flute. It's like, no, you trade the lyre in for the, and like, well, where's the flute? Everyone keeps mentioning the flute. How the heck do I get the flute? And then
yeah, it's just lying on the ground somewhere.
Yeah, and it basically took a while for Robert's like, well, you gotta go back to the Cole. I'm like, I was just there. And then when I went there, I'm like, oh wait, I remember I saw a little sparkly thing that I was going to look at, but then some bastard was blocking my way, so I had to walk around him, and then that made me leave the city, so I'm like, F it. And that was kind of frustrating, and it would have been interesting to think how long it would have taken me to figure that out if I didn't have gotten frustrated and complained about it to Robert. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Is that not hand-holding, or is it more like bad game design because there are no breadcrumbs, or...
There are no breadcrumbs.
This is an era before breadcrumbs.
Remember what I told you? By the way, original Dragon Quest, no shiny on the ground. No shiny. You had a search button in your menu, and you just had to click it.
Yeah.
And hope for the best.
Oh, God. Yeah, that sounding familiar for some reason.
Oh, I'm sure your brother played it. They gave it out with Nintendo Power subscriptions. Like, it was a thing.
Yeah.
I mentioned it a little bit earlier. If you play Dragon Quest Builders, like, spend the $3, right? Spend the $3 and play this game. On Iowa, it's real worth it because I was playing it and I was getting these weird flashbacks to Dragon Quest Builders because it's obviously the game I played more, because you do get the Lyre of Iron in there. Like, that's in there. Like, all of those items are in there.
Oh.
And you know, you rebuild Cole and you rebuild Cantalin and you rebuild Rimmeldar and all those places.
Yeah, so, I recognize the names.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I it's making me want to go back and play Dragon Quest Builders again just to see, like, how much the storylines line up, because, like, yeah, that game is in, like, an alternate timeline where your character from Dragon Quest 1 says yes and takes over half the world, and then, you know, 100 years later or however it is, like, the world's in darkness and everything's awful. I just thought it was cool. I was very impressed with especially the mobile conversion of it, because that's the one that they stole a lot of the names from, how much it synced up with Dragon Quest Builders. I thought that was really cool, and yeah, like, good on them. That was good. That's good design.
I recognize the music too, and it's pretty good.
Yeah, I love Dragon Quest music. It's so good. And unlike a lot of other games, like, they've done a really good job over time of just having the theme, but just, like, you know, like, you listen to it and it's like that stupid MIDI, and yeah. and then like, when it hits Super Nintendo times, like, oh, that's kind of supposed to be horns, isn't it, in that Super Nintendo way.
Well, MIDI technology improved over time, right. So you know,
and then by the time you got to Dragon Quest, I think it was 8, they actually recorded it with a symphony for at least the theme, just listening to that, and it's neat how you can hear this progression of, like, the MIDI to the third iteration of the MIDI, to the SNES, you know, music, and then, like, all of a sudden, like, you know, the symphonic, like, you know, Dragon Quest music is dope. I love Dragon Quest music so much. I was playing Dragon Quest Heroes after I did my first, like, real mission for it. It has this little status screen where it's like, how you did in the battle, and this theme was playing, and it, like, hit me like a sack of bricks, because it's the theme when you get the princess, the third party member in the next game. I think that's the overworld theme after you get her, because the overworld theme changes every time you get a new character, if I remember correctly. And I remember it, but I remembered the MIDI version of it, which was, you know, it was like, and like, but that always stuck in my head for years afterwards. Like, I'd hum it to myself sometimes. And then I'm just listening to this theme, and it's this nice orchestral theme, and it's got these these violins, and they're doing that. And I'm like, and it just, like, like, it just face full of, like, nostalgia for, you know, playing hard mode Dragon Quest 2. And they've kept all the sound effects too, and they've kept them very lame. Yeah. And you'll notice it's that
very 8-bit.
Yeah, it's very 8-bit. And you'll notice it's a reoccurring theme with Dragon Warrior games or Dragon Quest games, because yes, there are things that happen in those games just because they did it in this game right here. And they're like, well, we perfected it then. We're just never going to change it, ever. You're just going to have to go save... Actually, in the next game where they're like, saving at the King's Lame, what if we have him save at a priest? And that's just it. That's all, how all of the future games work, up through Dragon Quest Heroes, because there's a nun that you save your game with in the town. And it's just like... and then there's some character designs that they keep recycling over and over again.
Well, they have the whole... Is it chibi art style?
It's the guy who did Dragon Ball Z. He did all the art for it. So it's anime art at the very... Yeah, and it's just like, you just see these reoccurring themes. It's like, why are they like that? You know, like I was watching the preview for Dragon Quest XI, and the dude's running through town, and that character model, the big beefy dude's wearing those weird masks.
Yeah,
which I realized are sprites in the first Dragon Quest game. Like you could see the beginning of that motif back then, and like over the years they interpreted it to big muscly guy wearing this weird hood. And it's like, but they're just randomly about town, and you think a sane person would ask, like, why is there a guy just wearing like chest straps and a weird hood with horns on it?
Kind of like a gimp mask, actually.
Yeah, kind of
like horns.
It's yellow leather, so it's safe.
But the having the bare chest with the straps, like what's up with that?
I know.
Yeah, but I mean, now that you've seen it, it's like, oh, well.
It's they did that in the first draft, and it's perfect. Just never change it. So I don't know if it's good for the whole thing, but it's good for the music. The music's great.
I like it too, so that's definitely good.
And our daughter likes it too, because I remember I booted up Dragon Quest 1, and she's been playing Dragon Quest Heroes, and she heard the music, and she's like, are you playing Dragon Quest on your iPad? I'm like, yes, I'm playing this game. And she's like, that's not Dragon Quest. I'm like, no, this is you're not playing. We'll talk later.
Aww.
Yeah.
We're a Dragon Quest family.
In the big show, at the end of the episode, we always ask, was it fun? So Dragon Quest Part 1, was it fun, Gina?
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun, mainly because I wasn't expecting something huge out of it, and it served its purpose, which was, it wasn't something complex, but it was... complex enough. It has a fun story, an objective. I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it was a game like it's supposed to be, and it did it well.
I would say this: if you're looking for a good gateway game for I don't want to say better, but more complex RPGs, this is a good one to get people started on, because the iOS version is short. Like, if you remember grinding for days in the first one, like, we completed it in less than 10 hours, I think.
Yeah. No, that's definitely good that it was so short, actually.
Yeah, and for $3, but, I mean, if you die in it, you only lose half your gold, and you get teleported back to the king, and you get to keep all your XP that you gain, so you don't, like, lose any... I mean, you lose progress, but you don't lose progress.
Yeah.
And just the sheer ease of the at least mobile version of the game, I would say, for what that is in this modern day, it kind of makes up for its shortcomings, which are it's very simple.
Well, everything. For like an RPG newbie like me, actually, that was pretty good, because one of the things that makes it difficult for me to play RPGs is the sheer amount of fiddliness that you need, passing out gear among your party members, party composition, what spells to level, what to cast.
Combo. It's good that we start here, because every as the games progress mechanically, they keep a lot of the same core, and then they just iterate on it up until we get to 6, when they just reinvent the wheel for no particular reason. But should we get there, we'll deal with that then.
Yeah, no, that's definitely good. And you're right, it is a good gateway game, but not only just for kids, but for anybody that's in the past been a little intimidated by RPG games. Like, I know you love like Final Fantasy Tactics, and for me the description of it sounded horrible, because
the learning game on that game is atrocious. I started and restarted that game like a good dozen times before it kind of clicked, and
I don't need to figure out,
it's a thing in RPGs, like just learning the basics of them enough that you can be skilled enough to do it is like part of the thing in RPGs. And I'll be honest, there's times I don't make it, like, just because of the way the game is, I just don't make it across that hurdle of understanding the game enough to actually function in it. And Dragon Quest, there's just not much there to function with. Yeah. It's like put the pointy end of your weapon into the bad guys.
Yeah,
is the weapon you're looking at more expensive than the one you currently have? Buy it.
And yeah, and pretty much like no need to cast Sizz or Sizzle or Fizzle.
I cast Fizzle a couple times to stop people from doing magic, but that was about it.
You know, I think in my case, I was thinking I need to spare the magic points. I could just take the hit. Because especially towards the end when they were casting like breathing fire on you, they looked like 10 points of damage, and it's like, that's nothing.
That's Erdrick's armor talking, by the way.
Wow.
It reduces fire damage by a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so, you know, that's that. And so that's what I'm kind of glad about, the simplicity of Dragon Quest One.
Well, you know what? If you like its simplicity and you like all of its, if it's weird BS, like, just kick back. Put your feet up on that coffee table, because like lots of it will not change forever.
Does the princess get better?
Yeah. Well, the princess joins the party in the next game.
Oh, well, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So there you go.
And she's not like a healer, is she?
No, she's the wizard.
Oh,
the cool. Healer's the second character, the prince.
Oh, that's
good. Yeah. Your party characters are fighter, cleric, wizard.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, the boys are the warriors and the clerics.
That's cool. That could work.
Yeah,
I mean,
so,
you know, it's still a bit of a trope, but whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it came out in 1987. What do you want? So speaking of which, everybody, if you want to play along with us, we're going to do at least a couple more episodes of this. The next game in the queue is Dragon Quest II Luminaries of the Legendary Line. We're going to be playing the iOS version, but I hear it's the same as the Android one. I think it's $5 on the iOS, the App Store. So if you want to play along with us and you know, come and listen to us talk about it in the next one, feel free.
And join the Facebook group, Forgot My Dice Fans.
Yes.
And ask questions if you have of us, of this game, or Dragon Quest 1, Dragon Quest 2.
Dragon Quest Builders. Any of it, yes. Dragon Quest 2, Luminaries of the Legendary Line. That'll be our next topic of discussion on the Forgot My Dice JRPG Book Club. I think it's now time to close the book and reflect. Do you have any reflections for me? Is this like the final thoughts? I'm going to put you on that. What are your reflections?
Well, my thought is, if this is a book club, then I think we need to have wine and, I don't know, bitch about men or something, too. Isn't that what the women at the book clubs do?
I worked at Borders. I kind of oversaw some book clubs, but I was never really interacting with them.
Oh, okay. Do you want to bitch about men?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you, though.
All right. How about wine? Everybody wants wine.
Should we get some wine for next time?
Maybe.
Maybe? Okay. Yeah. Make that happen. Should we be super classy and get a box or a bottle?
Well, a box is better, because then you could just pour at a glass at a time.
We could put it up here on the desk and just, yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. All right. Well, okay, that's your mission, people. Play Dragon Quest II. Come back to us in about a month or so with a box of wine.
Yeah.
We'll chat.
Yeah.
Maybe get a fire going.
Yeah.
Cozy up in her blanket. Yeah. Should still be kind of cold, depending on where
you live. Light some candles.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. I like it. All right, everybody. JRPG Book Club signing off. This was Robert.
This is Gina.
I don't know. Have a good night. Closing statement goes here.
Party on?
No, that's the other podcast.
Oh, okay.
We can't do that. We got to come up with something new.
But this is a spinoff.
If you have a good closing statement for us, I don't know. Think of it.
Say good night, Robert.
Good night, Robert.
The music you heard in this podcast was provided by Brian Winkleman. Funding for the Forgot My Dice podcast was provided by our supporters on Patreon. Thank you.